Did you know you can save money with the McDonald's app every single day? Yeah, I was surprised too. Deals every day right at your fingertips. I love a good deal, but the McDonald's app takes gaming the system to a whole new level. Just the other day, I treated myself to a 10-piece chicken nugget for only a dollar. Yeah, you heard that right. Just $1. All you have to do is order in the app. And get this. You can grab that deal once a week through December 2nd. The first time I discovered the deals in the app, I was honestly shook. I had to tell my whole group chat about it, and now we're always comparing who got the best app deal of the week. Plus, ordering ahead, total game changer, especially when I need a quick lunch or a treat after a long day. So why wait? Save money every day with the McDonald's app. Download it, get those deals, and treat yourself. You deserve it. Valid through December 2nd, 2024 at participating McDonald's. Offer valid one time per week. Excludes delivery. You must opt into rewards. So go check out McDonald's deals.
Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. The Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 352 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Katie.
And this episode is sponsored by Steph Charette. Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Steph.
Thank you, Steph. Today, we will be discussing part one of chapter 19 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Silver Doe.
Like that. Katie posted a GIF and it just makes me laugh every time. Is that Chihuahua that looks dead coming up from out the window?
How I feel when I wake up in the morning.
Oh my God.
Well, make sure you've read chapter 19 and you're ready to tippy toe your way through the details.
Tippy toe.
Like my children.
Your kids are doing.
Yesterday, me and Evie were playing, and she's like, "Let's tiptoe." And she goes, "Tiptoe, tiptoe," smacking her feet. I was like, "You gotta be quiet if you're tiptoeing."
Oh my gosh.
Nope.
Make sure to follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends, because if you like us, then they will too. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Swish Flickcast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/swishflickcast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going and gives you access to all of our exclusive extras. As always, we are accepting Potter stories or just any fun stuff, questions, or concerns to our email, which is swishflickcast@gmail.com.
It's time for the roll recap.
I caught
it.
Why did
you do that?
Awesome. Yawn your way through the details.
For real. Let's see if I can make it through this recap.
Sure.
Harry and Hermione are reading some of the life and lies of Albus Dumbledore, and Harry continues to struggle with his trust in Dumbledore.
Your kids are just so loud.
I know! All right? Can you hear it?
I can hear it.
No, on the thingy?
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Can you guys hear the children? I didn't say recrap!
This is turning into a recrap, though.
I am next time.
Harry's angry because why didn't Dumbledore tell him all of this when he was alive? And Hermione tries to tell Harry that Dumbledore loved him, but Harry can't see it right now.
It is a weep womp.
Big weep womp.
Weep womp.
But this is getting to be very exciting. I think I had some good notes for these chapters. I hope I blow my own mind again.
Oh my God.
Stop!
I think I'm still on Ireland time.
I've been waking up early.
Jet lag is a choice. That's what Taylor Swift says.
Not when I'm passed out in the hotel lobby. I wish I was kidding. I was out. There was drool on that leather couch.
At least it was leather. Wipe it right off.
Okay, here we go. Get serious.
He's dead. Black.
It's kind of funny because we just finished Prisoner of Azkaban, and I was like, no, he's not. He is.
He is not here.
He's very much unalive.
Any better.
All right, back to work.
I've been turned into a cow.
Can I go home?
Yes, you're excused.
What is that from?
What? Read the room.
SpongeBob.
No! Emperor's New Groove.
Oh.
Yeah, you ninny.
I forgot about that scene.
Well, I guess you gotta watch it again. Yeah, 30 times. Real.
30 times.
I want to lead you down the path that rocks. Oh my gosh.
Feel free to edit any of this.
I'm not editing anything.
Oh no.
Let it go, man.
Okay. So it's after all of the things happened in Godric's Hollow, okay? So in case you forgot, like I did, that's where we are. Okay. So Hermione had taken over the watch while Harry was sleeping. And so this is interesting to me because none of them have ever like sat at the tent door and watched before. But since there's like no discussion really about why they're doing this now, at least on page, but like think about it before, nobody was staying up all night or trading off to watch. But it's because Voldemort feels so incredibly close right now. They are scared. And Harry is having horrible dreams from the events that had just happened and all the stress that's on him. He had nightmares about Nagini weaving in and out of things.
I would have too.
Yeah. A giant cracked ring, which, Horcrux, and a wreath of Christmas roses.
Sad.
So obviously the Christmas roses are the ones that they laid on his parents' graves. But like, why dream about the Horcrux ring now?
Yeah, Harry's dreams aren't just like willy-nilly. Like there's always some sort of, every time we read a dream, we're like, is he a seer? You know?
Yeah.
So
I just,
why now?
Yeah, I just thought the ring was interesting. But also,
maybe just like a reminder of Dumbledore. Because of his, it like, disappointment with Dumbledore recently.
Okay. I like that. And then with the Christmas roses, although, yes, Harry had that experience firsthand, when I was thinking about it, I thought that maybe it could have been Voldemort's thoughts inside Harry's head at the time, too, from him reading Nagini's mind about what Nagini saw. Because she saw Harry and Hermione lay the roses on Harry's parents' grave,
right?
While they were polyjuiced, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just thought that was interesting. If maybe like after all of the events and after he thinks about what happened in Godric's Hollow the first time and blah blah blah, he then goes into Nagini's mind to see everything and how it all played out. At least that's what I would do if I wanted to get what really happened, right?
Yeah. That makes me feel even sadder for Nagini.
Yeah. I wish I knew how she, like, really felt, you know?
I just feel, I mean, like, we talked about this a little bit on our recent Felix Files about, like, how we think that with the information that's been given to us, once she is, like, fully in the snake form, her own mind is gone.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. That's what I gathered from what I like found online.
From the malediction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more animalistic rather than a human thought.
Yeah. So I do feel really bad for her. Because
it feels higher level though. And not, you know. I don't know how bright snakes are.
I don't either, but I feel like since she was human, she's got this magical affliction. Like she is, it's almost like Crookshanks being part Needle.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. There's an extra layer of.
That's true.
But I also gathered like from what we researched that like she's not the same person remotely. Mm. Yeah. It's sad.
It is. Quote, he woke repeatedly panicky, convinced that somebody had called out to him in the distance, imagining that the wind whipping around the tent was footsteps or voices.
this is actually Ron. Mm-hmm. You forgot. So Ron is using the Deluminator to look for them. So Hermione also hears these types of things and she agrees to go somewhere that's more sheltered. And they think that the sneakoscope isn't moving. So whoever or whatever is out there isn't a danger to them, but they still don't like it and don't want to be discovered. So 30 minutes later, they disapparate underneath the cloak. And this is why Ron doesn't see them.
Because he was like hanging out waiting to see if they would appear when they left.
Correct. So this moment right now after they leave is very important for upcoming events. Quote, "Where are we?" he asked, peering around at a fresh mass of trees as Hermione opened the beaded bag and began tugging out tent poles. "The Forest of Dean," she said. "I came camping here once with my mom and dad." So this is the exact moment when Phineas Nigellus hears from his portrait inside Hermione's beaded bag when she opened it to take out the tent poles, and she said their location. So Phineas Nigellus then immediately reports to Snape and Dumbledore's portrait. And this is seen later on in chapter 33, The Prince's Tale. And it's actually the very last memory that we get from that chapter and from Snape after he is unalived by Voldemort Nagini. And I'm every time that I have read this in recent rereads, so how many times have I read this book this year? At least, I think I read it once a month, except for last month.
Yeah, that was Throne of Glass month.
9 times.
Right.
9 times this year, and however many times on top of that. But every single time I've read this, it felt so different and very unlike the Snape that I had been reading for however many years of my life. And I'll tell you in a second. So I said it feels the most unsnapey wording, and I really want to talk to Lori Kim about this. And I think that it feels so unsnapey to me that it's probably his closest to being his true self in the series, other than the look at me line.
Yeah.
And so because we don't get to see Snape through anybody else's POV except for Harry.
Are we going to change our own minds about Snape as we read this?
I don't think so. It hits different for me. So we read him through Harry's POV, which is full of hate, yeah. Right? And loathing pretty much all of the time, right?
Yes.
Okay. So just listen. And look at it through a lens of he's not talking to Harry Potter. He's talking to his friend, Dumbledore. Okay? Quote, "And now Snape stood again in the headmaster's study as Phineas Nigellus came hurrying into his portrait. Headmaster, they are camping in the Forest of Dean. The mudblood, do not use that word. The Granger girl, then, mentioned the place as she opened her bag and I heard her." "Good, very good," cried the portrait of Dumbledore behind the headmaster's chair. "Now Severus, the sword, do not forget that it must be taken under conditions of need and valor, and he must not know that you give it. If Voldemort should read Harry's mind and see you acting for him..." "I know," said Snape curtly. He approached the portrait of Dumbledore and pulled at its side. It swung forward, revealing a hidden cavity behind it, from which he took the sword of Gryffindor. "And you still aren't going to tell me why it's so important to give Potter the sword?" said Snape, as he swung the traveling cloak over his robes. "No, I don't think so," said Dumbledore's portrait. "He will know what to do with it. And Severus, be very careful. They may not take too kindly to your appearance after George Weasley's mishap." Snape turned to the door. "Don't worry, Dumbledore," he said coolly. "I have a plan." And Snape left the room. Harry rose up out of the pensive, and moments later he lay on the carpeted floor exactly in the same room. Snape might have just closed the door. And so when I'm reading this, he's a different man. "I know," he says curtly, right? He's opening it. "You still aren't going to tell me why?" He's cool. He's calm. He says something in a coolly way, right? He's very chill. And I think it feels really good to see it from a different perspective other than Harry, because it feels almost like a fly on the wall of a friendship conversation.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
Yeah. I've never thought of it before like that.
Yeah, it was almost the moment where he's like, and you still aren't going to tell me why. It's like, I know you're not going to tell me why, but I just need to like.
It's like forgiveness has happened.
Yeah.
You know, they went through it as we like. After moments. Three.
Yeah.
Three and four. They were not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They weren't okay after. I mean, he lost everything and his mind at the end of three.
Yep. We just reread that.
And.
Oh, my God.
And he and Dumbledore's relationship was so incredibly strained. And I just, I liked seeing this and I liked seeing him in a different light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. It was like a little piece of who he probably really is. Like if you, I mean, he's got so much happening, right?
An unbelievable amount.
Yes. And he, like Harry, has so much thrust upon him. It's like, all right, the wizarding world is counting on you to do this. And if you don't, you know,
we're all screwed.
The world is going to, you know, it's going to be Voldemort Day every day. Mm-hmm. So I just, I liked this because I'm sure that I don't think he was his true self around Death Eaters. Before he turned to be a double agent. I mean, obviously he was lying the whole time when he was double agent, but like, I feel like he probably put on a show when he probably was more closer to who he was when he was with friends with Lily. Mm-hmm. But everybody else who he was around, he would change and chameleon into this other version of himself. But I think that around Dumbledore and around Lily, he was perhaps closest to who he really was.
Yeah,
I would agree.
I actually, well, okay, I'll talk about it whenever I get to my part. Never mind.
Okay. So we're in the tent, right? It's bitterly cold, and they only have these bluebell flames to keep them warm. Shout out to Sorcerer's Stone, because that's when Hermione first was able to conjure those and keep them in the little jar.
I wish I could do that. I just have vials of blue flame all lining my coat.
So Harry had two nights of very little sleep from, you know, keeping watch and these nightmares. So his senses are heightened. When you're on little sleep, your mind plays some interesting tricks on you. And since the encounter at Godric's Hollow and the loss of his wand, Voldemort feels closer than ever before. And so he's wearing all the sweaters he owns. And I don't know if you're there and yes. your friends. Yes. Could I be wearing any more clothes?
Yes.
That's what I think of. And so basically he's just passing time. That's literally Harry. He's just passing the time until morning. He's extra on edge because he feels like he can hear so much movement around him. It's making him nervous. He's like questioning their protective enchantments. He's wishing all the creatures in the forest would just like stop freaking moving and just stay still. And so he starts to fall asleep again, and he's starting to slump over as one does when they start to fall asleep and then you get the crick in your neck. And there's darkness and he can't even see his own hand in front of his face. And it's when he lifts it up to kind of like check this that he sees a bright silver light appearing right in front of him, moving through the trees soundlessly. Quote, he jumped to his feet, his voice frozen in his throat, and raised Hermione's wand. He screwed up his eyes as the light became blinding, the trees in front of it pitch black in silhouette, and still the thing came closer. And then the source of the light stepped out from behind an oak. It was a silver doe, silver white doe. Moon bright and dazzling, picking her way over the ground, still silent, and leaving no hoof prints in the fine powdering of snow. She steps toward him, her beautiful head with its wide, long-lashed eyes held high.
So he is staring at this doe and she feels familiar and safe to him. And I looked up just like symbolically what does represent. Like they represent an innocent creature.
And a female deer.
And a female deer. but Ray. My doe, a deer, a female deer. So by conjuring a doe, Snape's Patronus first.
Sure.
I found this article. It's from GameRant.com and it talks.
GameRant.
I know, I've never heard of that website before, but I liked it. It talks about Snape's Patronus and like potentially the meaning behind it, which I thought was really interesting. And I don't want to say this too loudly, but it made me understand potentially, at least I like this take on his like attraction to Lily. It doesn't make it feel as weird to me. I liked this. So I thought maybe
full stop. I would
share it with you guys and see
Deers
if you feel the
hot.
Same way.
Deers are hot, man. That's extreme. That's an extreme.
I know, because I really hate the whole like he's in love with her. But
no, I'm excited to
really
hear
good.
This. All right. These okay. eyelashes. This is like a Disney deer.
So by conjuring a doe, Snape's Patronus reflects his good intentions. As previously mentioned, a Patronus protects a witch or wizard against evil. This means that the Death Eaters never had a purpose to use the Patronus charm, unlike Snape. The Patronus confirms that Snape was never inherently evil and tried to maintain goodness in his heart, mainly for the sake of Harry's mother. That is just like the little bit of it in regards to like his Patronus. But please hold.
Hold on.
I should have just copy-pasted this. So, it says here, Snape's memories reveal that he met Lily before the pair went to Hogwarts. While Snape had a crush on Lily, she never reciprocated this and only ever saw him as a friend. When the pair arrived at Hogwarts, Snape is sorted into Slytherin while Lily is placed in Gryffindor. Throughout his time at Hogwarts, Snape is tormented by his unrequited love and the incessant mocking he faces from James. By confirming to Dumbledore that he's still in love with Lily, this shows that Snape cannot overcome the past nor the grief of Lily's death. The fact that Snape is still in love with Lily could likely explain why his Patronus is a doe. Wizards have no authority over their Patronus's appearance, meaning that Snape's subconscious love for Lily is so strong that it controls his Patronus's entire form. In Prisoner of Azkaban, audiences learn that a witch or wizard must think of happy memories in order to conjure a Patronus. Because Snape's Patronus is a doe, it's likely that his happy memories are largely linked to Lily Potter.
Lily.
Similarly, it's likely that Lily's Patronus was a doe because of her love for James. This shows that love can heavily impact a Patronus's appearance. It's also possible that Snape's Patronus is the same as Lily's because of their shared desire to protect Harry. Despite Snape's untrustworthy facade, it's revealed that he always had Harry's best interests at heart. Throughout his time at Hogwarts, Snape was looking out for Harry and protecting him against evil, despite his festering grudge against Potter's father.
Festering.
This is why Snape decided to cast the Patronus to guide Harry to the Sword of Gryffindor. A Patronus is created because of strong emotions, reflecting both Lily and Snape's strong desire to protect Harry. I feel like what I wanted to say is in another article that I didn't copy paste because that's not what I wanted to say.
Cool.
That's
still cool, though.
Okay.
But I did still like that.
Hold we on, can draw the conclusion that Snape also loved James.
Yeah. No. Okay, this is part of it. I'm going to do some more digging to see if I can, because we can still talk about it in the next episode, potentially.
Oh, really?
So this is from Screen Rant, which I know that we have used a couple times. So it says, Snape's Patronus was a doe, the same as Lily's. However, it's never clear if this had always been the case or if her silvery guardian had changed when she fell in love. Given that in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Tonks' Patronus was revealed to have changed into a wolf when she fell in love with Remus, it's a reasonably safe assumption that something similar happened to Lily. Since James's Patronus in Animagus form was a stag, Lily's became a doe to complement it. Of course, it is ironic that Snape's Patronus would also take the form that complemented that of his oldest enemy. The Harry Potter series makes it clear that the potions master despised James Potter so much that he could never bring himself to treat Harry with kindness. However, the fact that his Patronus changed into a doe indicates some level of acceptance. It's unclear when this change happened, but since Dumbledore was surprised by the doe, this could mean that it was only recently. Snape never got over his hatred of James, but if his Patronus changed into the form that Lily's had taken only when she fell in love, it would mean that he had come to accept the choices that she had made. By this point, he knew that he had been wrong to choose dark magic over his love for her, and Snape regretted the role his worst mistake played in her death until the day he himself was killed. His hatred for James was still there, but his doe Patronus was saying to Lily, "I accept that you didn't choose me, and I'm going to protect your son anyway." I liked that.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, and they all mess with our hormones. And I know that as a mom of two, my hormone imbalance needed some help. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extract called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Like for me, having some kids. PMS symptoms like irritability, moodiness, discomfort, uncontrollable cravings, poor sleep, feeling tired all the time. Hormone Harmony can help with those things. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality. And guys, it definitely shows. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SWISH, S-W-I-S-H, at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SWISH for 15% off today.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods wants to make it less stressful. You'll find awesome, hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. Somehow they know just exactly the perfect gift for every person you know. I did some poking around on the website, and now I have to get a custom pet embroidered sweatshirt. You know we love crewnecks and our pets. Just imagine a little embroidered teddy. When you shop Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small business. And with every purchase, $1 is given back to a nonprofit partner of your choice. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/swish. That's uncommongoods.com/swish for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
So, his urge, this is back to Harry now. Harry's urge to like call for Hermione disappeared because he somehow knew that the doe was there for him.
That's my mama.
Or my potions teacher.
Are you my mother? I am not your mother.
She walked away the doe and he called for her to come back. And like instinct just told him to follow it, which at the end of the day is really stupid.
Stupid. Absolutely dumb. Right?
Like real stupid. But yeah. This is a quote from the book. Deeper and deeper into the forest, she led him, and Harry walked quickly, sure that when she stopped, she would allow him to approach her properly.
No.
And then she would speak, and the voice would tell him what he needed to know.
Also no.
No. But also kind of yes, without actually verbalizing anything. Yeah. So as soon as she stopped, he went to speak to her, but she vanished. And as soon as she vanishes, he starts to feel scared because her presence meant safety to him. So now he kind of feels uneasy, like, oh, did I just get led into a not great situation? Which, like,
Kind of.
Anyway.
Right, like, is it one of those, like, bottom dweller fish with the lanterns that make
it, like, you
feel safe?
Like, you literally just had this happen with Bethelda.
True. Were at the bottom dweller?
Yeah, I swim with those guys all the time.
Like, he literally just did this and it turned out
like,
not
no,
good.
This feels right. I wasn't just attacked by a Voldemort snake and him.
That was living in
like,
a body.
Oh my god. So soon, oh, I just said that. He casts Lumos and looks around and like feels like someone is watching him, but no one says anything.
Sometimes I feel like somebody's watching me.
I was like, what
privacy
song? I was like, what are you singing? And then I got it. And then he also thinks to himself, there's no flash as a green light.
If you saw flash as a green light, you'd be dead, bro.
Literally. But he does notice this like frozen pool of water.
I don't see no green light, but check out that pool.
Right. This is from the book. His heart skipped into his mouth. He dropped to his knees at the pool's edge and angled the wand so as to flood the bottom of the pool with as much light as possible. A glint of deep red. It was a sword with glittering rubies in its hilt. The sword of Gryffindor was lying at the bottom of the forest pool. I just can't even imagine what he was feeling in that moment. Like,
did I fall asleep and I'm dreaming again? You know?
First of all, yes, that. Second, like, everything he has hoped for recently is right there. Like, that is the next piece to the puzzle that is really the most important piece besides the Horcruxes, because you can gather all the Horcruxes and not be able to destroy them, and then what's the point? Right? Like, this is really...
You could fiend fire and then risk your life.
Yeah.
No like big Goyle.
Deal.
Crab.
Yeah, him.
You know, the other one.
Does Goyle die in the movie? Is that what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who the heck knows what they did? I always remember it's Crab because once they get out of the room of requirement, Malfoy goes, Crab. And Ron goes, he's dead.
That's not funny.
Ron is, he's just like, he's dead. So mean.
But he just thinks, he's like, how did this happen? Like, did him and Hermione get drawn here magically somehow? Was the Doe a guardian of this pool? Had it been placed because they came here? Like, there are so many things that this could be. At the end of the day, it's not really important because, like, we know that it's Snape and it was because of Phineas and et cetera, et cetera. But, like, yeah, his head is just reeling. His mind is reeling because he has no idea, like, how to even comprehend what is happening right now.
Yeah.
So he tries to Accio it and it doesn't work because, like, Dumbledore says in the memory that we get to read later, that he has to get this sword, like, through an act of bravery or chivalry.
Valor. Mm.
And this is a quote from Zibook. What was it, Harry asked himself, walking again, that Dumbledore had told him the last time he had retrieved the sword? Only a true Gryffindor could have pulled that out of the hat. And what were the qualities that defined a Gryffindor? A small voice inside Harry's head answered him.
Their daring nerve and chivalry set Gryffindors apart.
Harry stopped walking and let out a long sigh, his smoky breath dispersing rapidly upon the frozen air. He knew what he had to do. If he was honest with himself, he had thought it might come to this from the moment he had spotted the sword through the ice.
All I can picture is his smoky breath, just like when you're a kid and you're out there, you're like, look. Smoking.
Every time I see my breath, I have to like puff it out. Not like you just did, you know.
Yeah,
but
I get it.
This is my worst nightmare.
It really is Katie's worst nightmare.
Reading it makes me highly uncomfortable.
What, you don't want to get choked out under ice and drown?
No, I don't. Okay.
Noted.
I don't even like touching ice cubes, okay? I don't want to go into a cold.
You don't like touching ice cubes?
It's so cold.
Well, it is ice.
And then when you crack them, some always falls on the ground and you step on it.
And then you got wet socks.
Which is my biggest nightmare ever. All right. So Harry decides, finally, no one's going to actually attack him. They had every opportunity while he's like staring at this pool to come out and attack him if they wanted to. So he starts taking off all his layers, right? His like 42 sweaters or whatever he has on. Yeah. A bit of comic relief as he's thinking to himself, how does chivalry come into this unless it counted as chivalrous that he was not calling for Hermione to do this for him instead? Which maybe, I don't know. I think it's more the brave act as opposed to the chivalry. But And the author here just wants to rip out my heart, shred it, stamp on it, and then spit on it because an owl hoots and Harry thinks of Hedwig. That's all. Just a quick little, oh, he felt a pang for Hedwig.
I think that might be her last mention.
Mm.
Maybe. I can look it up.
So sad. So Harry strips down to his undies. Barefoot in the snow. That might be. No, that's not my worst nightmare, but that sucks.
Second to last.
Yeah. This is smart, though, because you don't want sopping wet clothes. You want to put on the dry clothes, even though you'd be wet. Like, this is very smart of him to do.
So it's not so smart that he actually followed this random... No. Patronus out into the forest, but he was very smart when it came to jumping into the freezing cold water.
Uh-huh.
Minus the fact that he forgets to take the freaking locket off of
his neck.
I don't
think he forgets. I think he's so used to having to keep it on, which is dumb in itself. And we've talked about
that.
You
know what though? It never warms against his skin, and I'd be like, psh, you're too cold, and I'm about to get colder. Bye. You know?
Also, I'd put layers in between the Horcrux and my skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, you for know? Real.
I don't want that touching me.
Happen its little creepy sounds.
Heartbeat.
Ugh.
Like the telltale heart.
I hate it.
I wonder if that was like, you know, a thought in her mind. Like, let me make this creepy. Maybe.
That is a really scary poem. So Harry uses Defendo to crack the surface of the ice. Quote, it cracked with a sound like a bullet in the silence. Pew! Which like I can
pew pew.
I can feel that because, like, you ever get up in the middle of the night, go get a glass of water, opening the cupboard is
loud. Everything is
loud. Your glass, like, gently setting on the counter is loud. Everything.
Have you ever heard
so
a tree
loud.
Fall? Or a branch break?
Yes.
I don't know.
So loud.
Yeah.
It's so loud. It sounds crazy. That's what I envision.
Yeah, it's probably something like that. So he's pretty sure that this pool isn't too deep. But he's still going to have to completely submerge himself in order to get the sword, which sounds awful. Meg's over there like, I want to get an ice bath, literally. And I'm like, no.
I really do.
Feedies.
So this is some brave stuff, too. He thinks contemplating the task ahead would not make it easier or the water warmer. Like, in my head, I would just be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I have to do this. But Harry's like... You're not helping yourself. Like, just do it. I don't know. It's like a different perspective that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I can't even go into a cold pool in the summertime.
No, she can't.
Like, I literally can't. So Harry jumps and, quote, every pore of his body screamed in protest. The very air in his lungs seemed to freeze solid as he was submerged to his shoulders in the frozen water. He could hardly breathe. Trembling so violently, the water lapped over the edges of the pool. Ooh. I hate this. I can't, like, my chest feels tight just reading it. So he feels around with his feet that are already numb for the sword, only wanting to dive under once. Smart. So he puts it off as long as he can, gathers all his courage, and dives. Quote, the cold was agony. It attacked him like fire. I hate this. So he manages to grab the sword, but then he feels something, like, around his neck, and he thinks it's water weeds. In my head, I was like, Harry, why didn't you think about, like, Grindelows?
The Grindelows.
But it's not that. It's the chain of the Horcrux trying to strangle him. And his fingers are too numb to untangle it. And he's, like, trying to kick to the surface. But I don't even know if he can properly use his limbs right now because they're freezing cold. So you can't go above the surface. What are you guys doing over there?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And then another quote, the arms that closed around his chest were surely death's. Nope. Stroll pal Ron.
I like that that's like a little bit of a nod to the Tale of the Three Brothers.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. So Harry's suddenly out of this frozen pool on the frozen ground of the forest, choking because he almost just drowned. And someone close by is also coughing and panting. And at first he's like, oh, Hermione came and rescued me. But it doesn't sound like her at all. So he has no strength at all to even like look at who it is until he hears them speak. And it's Ron going, are you mental?
Still in his underwear, by the way.
I love this in the audiobook, though, because like Jim Dale does Ron's voice and you're just like, ah, he's back.
Yeah.
poor Ron didn't have the time to get undressed to save Harry's life, you know?
Mm.
So he's literally sopping wet. He's got the Sword of Gryffindor in one hand and the Horcrux with the broken chain in the other.
Hot. Hot visual.
It's a pretty good stance there.
Yeah.
That's a flex. Why the hell didn't you take this thing off before you dived? If anyone knows how powerful this Horcrux is, it's Ron. More than either of them. And as we get into the next part, the next episode, like, this was his Horcrux to kill.
Yeah.
Because it affects him so much. Harry can't even answer. He can't believe Ron's there. And he starts just, like, putting on all his clothes again. This was so cute, though. As he drags sweater after sweater over his head, Harry stared at Ron, half expecting him to have disappeared every time he lost sight of him. And yet he had to be real. He just dived into the pool. He had saved Harry's life. So he's like throwing on sweaters like, is he still there? Is he still there? My bestie.
This is like, it's like the nice little bookend to when Harry kept looking at Ron's empty bunk after he had left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just to remind himself, he's gone. He's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. And now he's back. He's back. He's back.
So then Harry's like, it was you? And Ron's like, well, yeah. And he's like, you cast the Patronus? And he's like, no. Like, what are you talking about? I thought that was yours. And I like how they do this in the movie, too. And Harry's like, no, mine's a stag. And he goes, all right, antlers. And that's the end of part one.
This was a hefty chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So much happens.
All right, lightning bolt round. Marguerite asks, do you think Snape and Dumbledore have fireside talks about life up in the headmaster's office?
I feel like Dumbledore would be like, try lemon drops and go look at some knitting patterns.
Yeah, for real.
Like, expand your
expand your hobbies.
I bet Dumbledore just says like a bunch of random Dumbledore facts that just like annoy Snape, but don't annoy Snape because he probably misses him a lot.
But yeah,
I think he does. I think they do.
Yeah. Why not?
Mac Energy asks, was Snape's presence in the dough or Lily's connection with the dough that made Harry feel safe?
Both? Maybe both?
I think it was probably both, but I...
Does he know at this point in time?
I don't
Lily's
think so.
Patron-
no.
I don't think he knows until he sees Snape's memory.
Yeah, you're right.
But maybe there's some magic about it that just is comforting. Like, I know that this is a safe Patronus. Kind of like when Arthur's weasel came and was like, family is safe. Like,
yeah.
Well, also, if there's a Patronus cast, it's from somebody who's good, right?
Right, yeah. I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Like, he has to know that it's not a Death Eater.
Right.
Plus, like, a Patronus is literally a pure form of magic.
Right. And it's protection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't. There is no such thing as an evil Patronus. So it's going to be safe no matter what.
Katie K, would you follow a random Patronus you saw out in the woods?
Yeah. Just because of the things we just said.
I would probably be like,
yo, I'm not going by myself. Hey, Hermione, come with me.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go by myself.
Yeah. The whole, like, darkness pressing into your eyes thing, and like your all the sounds and everything are already like tricking up your brain. I can't be by myself like that. I need someone with me.
Katie K again. Would you be able to convince yourself to be able to jump into the near freezing lake TM pond?
Don't know. Don't know. How dire is it to save the Wizarding World? Yeah.
I definitely would. I would do it for joy.
That's horrible.
Would you? That's horrible. Tiffany?
Huh? I'm sorry.
Would you jump into the freezing water?
No. Excuse me. I'm so sorry. Boing. Sorry. I sure wouldn't.
Mac Energy. Why was James's Patronus a stag? What personality trait makes his a stag? Like Harry, did James's dad have a stag Patronus too? A bit off topic from the chapter. LOL.
That's a cool thought. I like that actually a lot. But I mean, I feel like what we see from like Weasleys, perhaps not. I would like to think they're more individual.
I think that they're individual.
And I feel like the stag is really good because it's like strong and flashy, like James, I think, saw himself.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, have you ever seen deer play?
Mm.
They're like dogs.
Oh,
they're like really? Dogs.
Oh, wait, we totally saw, remember?
Oh, that's right. We saw them running in the field. Mm-hmm. When we lived in Kent.
The one mom had twins.
And they were playing.
And she was just like watching over while they were like just galloping.
Yeah. It was cute.
Adorable.
So I think like that matches too because he's like silly, you know?
Yeah.
They're so funny. They chase each other.
One of the things that a stag symbolizes is strength. There's lots of other things too, but.
Yeah.
Amy Lou asks, do Grindylows go dormant in the winter like toads?
Sure. I could see that.
Yeah, they could. That makes sense.
Because their fingers are strong but brittle, right? So if it's cold, are they going to be even more brittle?
You can't grab anything. Your fingies break right off.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go yes. All right. That's every. Oh, discourse. That's right. Blake Grace said, Tracy Ellis Ross once said, people think they are drawn to her, but it's really themselves they're drawn to. Because she allows them to be who they really are. I like to think this about Lily. Aww. So many people were drawn to her because around her they were able to be who they really were. Snape, aww. Lupin, James.
I
think that's like the best person to strive to be.
Yeah.
You know?
I like it.
Marguerite said, that's a sad moment because his mom left him and she, Snape's doe, embodies his mom's Patronus. Yeah. Thankfully, he, like we just said, like doesn't realize that that's his mom's Patronus yet, though.
Yeah.
All right. Fan story time.
Okay. This person told me to have fun pronouncing their last name and gave me no phonetic spelling.
Oh, and a winky face?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they playing.
I like you.
This comes from Eva McApring.
That's what I would have said. Please write to us and let us know.
I want to know. Hi, my name is Eva McApring. Have fun with the pronouncing. And I started listening to the podcast in December, and I love it.
What December?
I think it was, you know, can't remember. I think this was a more recent one, though.
Mm-hmm.
I started from the beginning with the first episode, and I don't listen to the current episode yet because I'm still stuck in the Goblet of Fire reread. So I'm not sure if you still read fan stories at the end of each episode, but I want to share mine with you.
Please.
My house is Ravenclaw. My Patronus is a kingfisher.
What's that? A bird?
A bird.
A bird.
And my wand is Maplewood with a unicorn core, 13 and 3/4 inches. Solid flexibility.
That's a big wand.
The way you said that. the first time I had contact to the Harry Potter books was around 2019, and I was 10 or 11. My parents read the books.
That's not okay.
I can't compute. What is this math?
No!
I read that. My brain was like, bzz, you know?
I know.
I glitched.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Stop! Oh. My parents read the books to my brother and me, and I know that I really love them, but after we finished the seventh book, I never had really contact to the world of Harry Potter again. I watched only the first three movies because I was really emotional and sensitive with movies, especially to see how people die or get hurt. Wasn't easy for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to see the other movies when I was younger, and then it just never happened. But I think my real story begins 5 months ago with the start of my exchange year in Ireland.
Hey! Nice!
I'm from Germany, and I'm in Ireland right now and live with a host family and go to school here,
etc. That's awesome.
I found Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone in the bookshelf of my host family shortly after my arrival, and I picked it up because I remembered that I really enjoyed the books when I was younger. It was actually the first book I read in English, and I was immediately hooked by the story. After the first book, I listened to the next two as audiobooks, and then I could loan the rest of the books in the library. I was honestly surprised how good the books are and how much I had already forgotten. I just finished the seventh book, and I was so hooked that I read the last chapters at one evening until 2 a.m. of the next morning. My time during the exchange year isn't always easy, and I was really lonely for a long time, but I found friends in the Harry Potter world, and it helped me a lot during these times. Now I know how I can enjoy the experience, even if I spend a lot of time alone, and that Hogwarts is always there for me. My story is a bit longer than I thought, and sorry for any mistakes. My English is still not fluent. You're totally fine.
Oh my God, you're so much smarter than me. Two more than one language.
Right?
Right? Please keep going with the podcast. You help so many people.
Aww.
Don't let the muggles get you down. Eva.
Eva.
Thank you for your story.
You're so sweet. I love that you're doing now.
I love that you found comfort in Harry Potter. I feel like that seems to be like such a pattern, is that people will like drift away from it, and then when they're in need of comfort, they somehow find their way back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was literally me in college.
Yeah.
You know, I really need a pencil. I keep forgetting a pencil to mark these off, and then I get scared.
Oh, I thought that was the joke.
I was like, where's this going?
what do I say?
Sorry. So hopefully I didn't say this one before, but. Did Dobby go to school to learn his job? No, he was elf taught.
Jeez.
Crazy woman.
Oh, there's bread upstairs.
Yes, there is.
Okay.
If you'd like to follow your hosts on social media, myself and Katie are on Instagram and TikTok at The Peaches Family. Tiffany's on Instagram at TiffSwish_flick. I do not believe that we got a bingo today.
Ooh.
Meg, why are you reading that so fast?
I do not believe we got a bingo.
There weren't very many Slytherins in the chat this evening, so.
Tiffany! You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh my God.
What I do with this?
Unfortunately, Gryffindor's in first.
What? Unfortunately, you butt.
Slytherin is in second. Ravenclaw is in third. Hufflepuff? And Hufflepuff is in fourth.
Oh, that's okay. It's all right. That's fine. Go, go, Gryffindor. Roar, roar, Gryffindor. That hurt my throat.
Finish this so you can trivia go night's and coming cut up. Me bread.
Is it trivia?
Sometime
November.
Yeah, it's in November.
Yeah, trivia's coming. Yeah. All right, study. I'm not going to tell you the topic though. That concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles or teeth get you down.